the Rule of Three, post-debate episode, I guess. And not that it was so exciting enough as to be PD, I guess. It's not BC. It's not that big of a deal. It's not going to change that much that we're going to look at everything post-debate. But it is the night after the debates here on the Rule of Three with Brian Miller here and Tim Slagle on the other end of the mic.
This is actually the second post-debate show we've done.
Yes, and feels like a long time since that debate, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's actually, it's been 2 weeks.
It's like Snoopy's doghouse. It's like bigger on the inside than it looks from the outside.
If you're a Doctor Who fan.
The TARDIS?
The TARDIS, yes.
I didn't know that the TARDIS was supposed to be bigger on the inside.
Well, it's a phone booth.
Yeah. I thought it was like Superman. It was not like the phone booth in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I thought it just took you somewhere.
No. You go inside the TARDIS and it's enormous.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's the entire BBC studios inside. Oh. Yeah, absolutely. I guess. Well, yeah. I guess that's another thing. Is Brian Miller looks like a Doctor Who fan? Never watched an episode.
Nope. Never watched an episode of Doctor Who. Never read Lord of the Rings or The Hobbits. Don't like the movies. Not a fan of Star Wars. Shattering all kinds of people's assumptions and delusions and hopes.
And can cite more football stats than you would imagine.
Yes, exactly. I'm a real mystery wrapped in a riddle over here. The debate, though, last night, it did seem in some way truly like the culmination of this incredibly long, weird news cycle between the two debates. I suppose it lived up to the hype, wouldn't you say?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. It was quite anticipated. I mean, there were a couple of drops. There was, of course, the remark that Donald Trump made 10 years ago that I can't help but think of a joke that Brian Miller does every time.
I've had a couple of people mention that to me.
It actually did. It very funny. Other people recognized it too, huh?
Yep. That's got a couple of emails and a couple of texts, actually.
Well, how do you grab it? Well, there's but with a finger.
Yeah.
one in particular.
Your designated hitter, as it were.
Ooh. Is designated hitter in the act?
No. No. I don't get too much into the specifics of it. I try to keep it a little bit vague.
No. That's a nice little tag.
It's kind of gross.
Well, so's the joke. I mean, which makes it funny.
Yeah.
But I mean, you actually could. It's you could say I never really considered that I had one. A designated hitter, so to speak.
Now I got to promote within the ranks. Internal hire, as it were.
Got Ted on the bench, but.
So did you did live up to the hype, though? I thought in terms of the, I mean, for whatever, to some degree, I think people wanted the lurid clash, and this was the lurid clash.
Yeah. People were disappointed that it did not occur in the first debate, especially the Trump supporters, because they, I think, a lot of the support for Trump was because they wanted to see the lurid crash.
Yeah.
Is that they didn't think that any of the other 16 were capable of calling her on the carpet and just saying it. And he definitely did not disappoint last night. He had a press conference. You saw that, right?
No.
He told the press, you know, I'm going to have a little conference and photo op before the debate. If you guys want to come in, we'll be in this room.
Oh, with the ladies or whatever.
And the press came into the room, and it was, oh, let me introduce Bill Clinton's victims to you.
that was a Steve Bannon move, if ever there was one. The ghost of Andrew Breitbart was bringing them a cheese tray.
I found it delightful. People are saying it's a sleazy tactic. I don't care. You know, so I is, so is pulling sleazy. Up something. So is pulling up something some guy said off mic 10 years ago.
I don't think that's sleazy. I think that's standard. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's standard sleazy.
Well, I don't know. I think there's a pretty big difference between using rape victims as props and political props and airing footage that has someone admitting to sexual assault.
I don't know that he was admitting.
He was claiming, put it this way, he was either lying to sound cool and saying he committed sexual assault, or he was admitting to sexual assault.
Yeah, I think it was A.
Well, but I mean, that's the thing. That's the funny thing is he can't really say it because it makes him sound almost worse in a weird way. Like, I'm not a rapist. I just pretend to be a rapist so I can look cool. It's like, what? Here's the thing, man. I'm watching that debate. I was thinking anybody but Donald Trump would be winning this.
Yeah.
She was not good. She was not good.
Apparently that came up in a WikiLeaks document is that Trump was the selection of the Clinton campaign. It's how far they went to encourage it, but there is like a memo somewhere that is the candidate that she wanted to oppose. Is that the other ones actually concerned her? That was the one that she thought she could beat.
I agree. I mean, I really think, I think especially like boring old Jeb Bush would just be cleaning her clock right now.
Yeah. Which is kind of weird because on one hand, you've got the Clinton campaign saying, which one can you beat? And they go, well, Trump. And then meanwhile, you've got the Republicans in the caucuses saying, which one is going to beat Hillary? And they thought it was the same one. The one they thought could beat Hillary the best is the one that Hillary thought would be no problem.
Yeah. But yeah, that is interesting. You're right, because I wonder what the disjunction is there, or what's the philosophical difference that causes that, because that is it is a like 180 degree different idea when, you know, if you say you take away the personal details of it, she just wants to run against somebody she can beat, and they just want to run somebody that can beat her.
Right. And well, I think what it is that the way they view the electorate is that the Clinton camp believes that if you show professionalism, if you show experience, if you show rational thought, the ability to get along, that's what gets elected. Whereas the Trump supporter, not necessarily all the Republicans, but the Trump supporter believes that there's been this wall that candidates have not been able to break through. That they need someone. They need someone to charge the troops, so to speak, to break through the media wall that has not been allowing the truth of Hillary Clinton to be told. And I think that's the disconnect.
Yeah, you know, maybe they kind of just mixed up the function where it's like, no, you need your Glenn Becks to do that game. That it doesn't work as well coming from your candidate.
Yeah, but the trouble is the Glenn Becks have been dismissed. Is that anyone that actually speaks against the Clintons has been dismissed by the other side? It's like, oh, that's just Fox News. Oh, that's just Glenn Beck. Oh,
yeah. Well, the problem is the people who do it are the Glenn Becks. I mean, you know, he's a kook.
You see, that's what I'm saying. Is he really a kook, or is he just saying things that the mainstream media will not say?
He's a kook. Wow. I Rio, he's a kook.
I understand what you're saying. I tend to agree with you. Is Glenn Beck always reels me in too? He starts out and he's saying, "This is the problem with the economy today." And you sit down and you go, "Well, yeah, that kind of is." And this is what we need to do. Yeah, that kind of is. And the Illuminati is prepared.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa, how did you take me there?
No, I completely agree. But that's not to say that we couldn't be right about, you know, a thing or two. It's like the National Enquirer or something, you know. Sometimes they get them right.
Yeah.
I mean, plenty of times they claim, you know, how many times has Jennifer Aniston been pregnant, according to the National Enquirer?
Well, I believe the National Enquirer used to be a lot worse than it is today.
And, you're right. Actually, the guy who owns it, the new owners have tried to make it more of a kind of pseudo-legitimate tabloid paper.
Well, what actually happened was the Carol Burnett incident.
Huh?
Are you familiar with this?
No.
Is National Enquirer published an article about Carol Burnett getting drunk at a Beverly Hills restaurant and embarrassing, I forget the details of what they said she did.
Sure.
And she sued their pants off. She took them to court for millions back when $1 million was a lot of money.
Sure, because they were just making crap up.
Just making crap up. And at that point, the National Enquirer split into two entities. The National Enquirer, with just pretty much posted pictures of celebrities in bathing suits, and the Weekly World News.
Ah, Bat Boy.
And that became the repository for all their made-up stories.
Huh. Well, that makes sense. And then, speaking of making up stories, we got to make up a story for the next segment, because we're out of time on this one.
Or at least a second.
Yeah. Second segment of Rule of Three. I'm getting ready to head out of town. Not quite yet. Got a couple of days to go, but I am. I'm going someplace that only a comic in the North would go to. I really can't think of anyone else in the world that would go to Minot, North Dakota, unless you were a stand-up comedian working the North Central corridor
of
the United
Screech.
States. Or Screech. Well, then he's. You know what? He screeches. You know, as it goes, a neighbor of mine. He doesn't live next door to me, but he lives a few towns over. He lives in pretty shallow, no pun intended, into Wisconsin, just a little ways over the bridge.
Huh, I didn't know.
Yeah, no, he is, for better or worse, a fellow comic of the region. I mean, we work a lot of the same rooms. Whew, man, yeah. I'm starting to question things. Holy smokes.
Well, you know, the thing is, though, you didn't star in a sitcom.
No, that's true. Nor do I have a sex tape.
And it's you didn't go through that whole chain, and yet you're still on the same level. So,
congratulations to me? Question mark.
Well, no. I guess what I'm trying to say is you are ascending.
Sure. Yeah, no.
He is coming. You are on parallel ladders. You're going in opposite directions, and you just happen to meet at the paint bucket.
I think I'm just hanging out at this part of the ladder, watching him go down. I don't know how much I'm going up the ladder, but I'm at least I'm chilling on the ladder.
I have been doing Minot for a number of years. And one of the reasons why I enjoy doing the gig is that I found out that Amtrak goes there.
Really? Is that the end of the line, or do they have some sort of trans-Canadian
railroad?
Oh, no.
The end of the line for that route is Seattle. It's the Empire Builder.
Oh, the Empire Builder goes through Minot?
It stops in Minot.
That's crazy. That seems like a really big diversion.
No, straight through.
Wow.
Minneapolis to Minot. It's along the way. So Chicago starts in Chicago, ends in Seattle, and in Minot along the way. It's part of the reason why Amtrak is so bad. because airlines which are privatized go where people want to go.
Yeah.
So they stop in places like Las Vegas and Fort Lauderdale, and attractions.
Yes.
The train stops in places where politicians with clout want them to stop. And in North Dakota, with its three electoral votes, make sure that that train still stops in Minot. And
yeah.
What's interesting about it is because once you get west of Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's just straight open prairie, so that the train can highball, and that it actually exceeds speeds of 100 miles an hour west of Minneapolis. So
wow.
It actually is from Chicago. It's probably quicker for you, But from Chicago, it actually takes exactly the same amount of time to take the train as it does to drive.
And I had checked that out before. It was like a 6-hour trip, and I remember thinking, yeah, that's about driving there.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why. And it was, and especially when we were talking $4 a gallon, it was cheaper than the gas. Not to mention, you can do things that you're not supposed to do when you're driving. You can sleep.
Text.
You can text. I was going to say read, but who does that anymore?
I would always get drunk and read on the train, actually. That was my go-to.
That's the other thing. That's the other thing that's discouraged when you're piloting a vehicle.
Yeah, you know, so they used to have smoking cars on the trains up until pretty darn recently, and I remember the smoking car was a real highlight.
Well, actually, it wasn't just the smoking car, it was the bar car. It was actually, they were actually bars. They were literal bar, with a bar, with seats, with ashtrays, and it had all the excitement of being in a bar. I actually took the city of New Orleans down to New Orleans for Mardi Gras one year. And I just had a blast in the bar car. And they got rid of that. Then they had smoking cars, and then they got rid of those and recently. And then now there's several stops where you can walk out and take two puffs of a cigarette and they let you know.
Yeah, you could hit your vape real quick and then dart back on the train. But I didn't even know I could take the train to Minot, which I'm going with the Kostaki Economopoulos, by the way.
Wow.
It's a romantic story. We met in Minot. The only other time I've been to Minot was I did a tour with Kostaki, and I met him in Minot, and he flew in there, and then we started there, and we zigzagged our way west until we got to Wyoming, Sheridan, Wyoming, I think it was. So it was a long road trip. So this one's a little shorter. This one we're doing Jamestown, North Dakota, on the way to Minot, and then two nights in Minot. It's funny. I said, I was talking to, I did some radio for it this morning, and the woman said, oh, you'll be at this bar called The Landing. And I said, that's cool. I said, you know, maybe that's where I was last time in Minot. And she goes, oh, you're probably at the other place. The other place.
So I was one of the things I enjoy about Minot is always the train leaves Minot at on Saturday. It leaves, and I'm not sure if I'm absolutely right on this, but it leaves at 9:30 p.m.
Oh, you sleep straight through the night. You're in Chicago, right?
Right, but it's sometimes late. So usually I would get off stage about 9:30, 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I would normally miss it and have to stay over another 24 hours, which was always a drag. But it was always fun. I would have all my luggage there and I would have my ride ready, and I would get off stage, grab my luggage, and rush me to the train station, hoping that the train was late, which, you know, considering it started in Seattle and there's a lot of stops in between Seattle and Minot, that there was a real good chance. So it was always a race. It was always excitement. And it's, you know, and if you lose the race, 24 hours in Minot.
Yeah. I'm picturing young, sad Slagle's dreadlocks dangling in sadness.
My Minot joke is that, because there's an Air Force base there.
Yeah, right.
And they call Minot the Magic City. That's their, did you know that?
I did not.
It is the Magic City. And the reason why is that when you're discharged from the Air Force, people just disappear and are never seen again. But actually the reason why, of course, is that it's a railroad town. And it was not, and that's all it was a railroad town. They needed a stop to get more wood and water.
Mm.
And in between there and wherever the next one is, that's what, and this whole booming town just appeared in the prairie out of nowhere overnight because they needed a stop on the train. So,
wow, that's why
it's actually the Magic City.
Interesting. My thing, I love it, you know, they say, everybody, they had the thing, why not, Minot? is their city slogan. And then, of course, this the snarky unofficial response is, "Friesen's the reason." And they say that to each other with these big dopey smiles. And I always want to say,
with a little bit more of an accent too, that you're not throwing in there.
Well, that's true, yeah. But I always want to tell them, there's a lot more reasons than that. I mean, I could start the list now, but we'd be here a while.
They have the Swedish museum there.
Oh.
The Swedish American Museum there, and it looks like a miniature golf course. Interestingly enough, but they also have every fall, they have, I don't know what they call it, but it's like Sweden Days,
huh,
or something like that.
You and do the hotel, know a lot about my nuts.
I'm telling you, or Norwegian Days or Scandinavian Days. It might actually be multicultural, and the hotel where the club used to be was like the nicest hotel in Minot.
Mm.
Which is, you know, it's just a Best Western with a holodome, essentially.
Sure.
You know, but that's it. That is the place in Minot. And so it was curious. I'm checking in for the gig and I'm looking at the schedule there, and I see that at the Scandinavian Fest that had just happened a couple weeks before, they hadn't taken the schedules off the desk, that Bob Newhart was there.
Wow.
And I said, "Wow, did Bob Newhart stay here?" And the person behind the desk just looked at me and said, "Not that I remember." And it was, I thought to myself, "Well, where else would Bob Newhart have stayed the night of his gig?"
Yeah.
And then I go out to my car to pull around to my room, and I look across the street and I see an airport there. I go, "Oh."
Oh yeah, he got the hell out of there, right?
Yeah. I think as Bob Newhart got off the private jet, he said to the pilot, don't turn it off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Leave her running, Sully.
just keep the engines running. I'll be back in an hour.
Well, I remember my one night in Minot fairly fondly, so I'll let you know next week how it goes. I'm looking forward to getting back. Kostaki, we're doing two shows, and so that's always a lot of fun with Kostaki. So he draws a good crowd. So we shall see. I'll use my newfound knowledge of Minot to charm the locals.
We're back with the final segment of the Rule of Three. Of course, it's fall. The leaves are starting to change its color. The summer is over. I always, you know, it's always a sad time for me. I always, for some reason, think it's going to hold out in September. Holds its cruel promises that it may. But as October comes in, absolutely not. And the one thing that stands out more than any, I think, is the prevalence of corn mazes.
That's the thing that sticks out for you.
when the corn mazes start popping up, you know that that turkey and Christmas are not far behind.
That's true.
Of course, Halloween, but that seems to be lost. It's I've heard my first Christmas ad.
Oof, really?
On the air. Yeah, I heard my first Christmas ad with a little Christmas, you know, music jingle. So,
well, I'm keeping the faith. I'm decorating for Halloween now that we have a house. We've already got some stuff up. I'm buying pumpkins,
man.
Carving them up.
Oh, man. You're going to go nuts. You're going to get the fog machines and the strobe lights and the creepy soundtrack on the speakers. And you're going to do all that?
I'm not going to see how far we'll go. I'm going to see how many trick-or-treaters we get this year first, and then depending on how many people show up to witness it, maybe next year I'll modify my display.
We never had much. Our houses are we have long driveways.
Mm. I've seen a lot of neighborhood kids, and so I think a lot of people come to this neighborhood because I live in a neighborhood that is nice but not intimidatingly nice.
We went to full size candy bars a couple years ago because we were hoping that would attract more kids if word got out. But
maybe we'll do some full size, or that, or I'll just buy a giant bucket of candy and everyone will get just like an obscene handful. You know, just like just dump it in there.
No, we just fill the bowl and let them take as much as they want, so that it's good. That's kind of interesting. It's how much can we take? It's however much you want.
Interesting. So you kind of see their little personalities.
Uh-huh.
Do you ever have any kid, like, dump the ball into his bag?
No, never, never. And there's nothing I could do if he did.
I was going to say, if he did, I mean, to me, it'd have to go, well, here you go, kid.
No, usually when I make that offer, they're so astounded that they take two handfuls. That's the worst I've ever seen, is two full, as much as you can hold in two hands.
Which is in a tiny little kid's hand, you know, you got two fun-sized Mounds bars or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, and usually it's the little girls dressed up like Elsa that say, can I have two? I said, as much as you want, yes.
Have you ever had like a little timid kid just take one thing and you're like, I don't know, have some more?
No.
Or do you just let them, let them take, that's their business?
Yeah, that's their business. I said, however much you want. But that was before. Now we ended up buying all this candy and eating it all ourselves. Mm. So now we never get more than a dozen. So we buy a dozen full size candy bars, and that's it.
Maybe I'll do. I don't know. I'm curious to see, because like I said, we've never lived in the house in October, and it's a lot of neighborhood kids, and it's a pretty friendly neighborhood. So I'm hoping we get a bunch of them. But so I'll sit around with a bunch of dumb Halloween decorations, eating candy by myself, and watching scary movies. I don't need anybody else. This is provision to have
so
a good
here's
time.
Here's a story. I thought originally this was in a corn maze, but apparently not. Is hundreds of volunteers, Deerbrook, Wisconsin, just over the border for you, over the border for both of us. Now that I think about it,
yeah.
Hundreds of volunteers spent hours searching acres of cornfield Sunday. And almost a full day after 3-year-old Dighton Lagalbo went missing, the search was over.
That's why he was lost, by the way, is that nobody could call his name.
Hey, kid that gets made fun of in preschool for having a stupid name.
Hey, how old is he, 12?
Three.
Oh, three? Oh, wow.
3 years old. Yep.
Well, he could get lost in a soybean field.
Yeah, it took 2.5-3 hours looking in the field, and we stumbled upon him, said Tom Androsko, who found the child safe and unharmed. Androsko said after spending hours in the approximately 80 acres of corn,
Wow. Everything
started to look the same, which is the fear of the corn maze.
Absolutely. And if you've ever spent any time in a cornfield, surprisingly easy to have happen.
Yeah.
You kind of lose your bearings and you're just like, well, here we are. You know, it's just, you can't, unless you can, you know, stand up on somebody's shoulders and get a good look.
Which is, I guess, the allure of the corn maze is that it just all looks the same. It's, I don't know if you remember this, about 4 years ago. 4 or 5 years ago, an entire family got lost in a corn maze.
Oh, man. How humiliated must they be when they're like, our combined family effort.
They actually called 911. That's why it became the news.
Ooh, how do you report that? I guarantee you there was only two ways that phone call went. You know, somebody picked up the phone, and here's the version A. It's a 911, what's your emergency? Well, my husband is a dumbass. or 911, what is your emergency? Well, my wife's a witch and we ought to get divorced. But on top of that, whoever made the phone call was definitely looking for some. Because you know what? I don't know if you ever, when my wife and I really, really get to fighting, there's always that impulse of like, I'm going to call my friend Chris and I'm going to tell him the situation. He's going to tell you that you're great. You start to like look for like outside validation of your logic. So I'm sure the 911 operator got sucked into that.
Well, by the supposition that goes with the theory of asking for directions, the grand theorem of direction asking, I imagine it was the woman who made the 911 call.
Probably. Although, you know, my wife never stops for directions, and I'm always like, well, let's just find out where we are, and then we'll just go the right way.
So does that still happen? Does anyone have to ask for directions anymore?
Yeah, you know, so, particularly when we went on that family vacation in last winter to that really tiny town, and even when you had your Google Maps, it still just all looked like empty roads. You know, you still needed a nudge in the right direction because Google Maps wouldn't recognize where we were.
Huh. I, It would be interesting to find out how many guys are actually able to ask Siri for directions.
That just imply the question. You have to figure it out.
And I imagine it's not. Here's my theory on the direction disparity.
Mm-hmm.
Is there's a difference between men and women when they get treated, when they're asking for help.
Ah, that's interesting.
Is women don't understand why a guy doesn't want to ask for directions, because when a woman goes into the gas station and says, excuse me, can you help me find, all of a sudden there are 12 knights in shining armor telling her, willing to give her a turn-by-turn direction, some of them willing to escort her, some of them, you know, I will drive you and my buddy will take your car. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's men are, and especially if the woman is attractive, you know, forget it.
Yeah.
But when a guy goes in and says, you know, I can't find my way, the guy at the gas station will usually chew a little bit more of the tobacco, spit it, and just, what, something wrong with you?
Well, I guess I'll give you directions you're more comfortable with, so we'll start you out at the gay bar. I assume that's how you know where to get everywhere.
But even if you know, those two stereotypes are not accurate, I think that's what goes through people's heads. I think that's what guys, that's what's going to happen if I go in there. I know what's going to go in there, and if I ask. And the woman's like, I'm sure that there's people that are dying to help you in there.
Yeah, right. Are you a corn maze fan yourself? Speaking of, do you like? I think the appeal of the corn maze or being lost in the cornfield is like, it's the same as the terror, which is the, like, it doesn't matter where you go, it's all the same, which in a kind of Buddhist way is both awful and totally rewarding.
I have never actually been in a corn maze. I have never done the. I see them all the time, and I'm always saying, you know, I should try that sometime. That sounds like it might be interesting. But Mrs. Slagle has absolutely no desire, and in fact, abject fear of the situation.
So she's got the fear of the. She has the other reaction of the Buddha yin yang of the corn. She doesn't like the idea of the...
She's read a lot of Stephen King.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, the children of the comma in
yeah,
the index.
Yeah, and mazes and corn were both prominent parts of some of his more famous stories. So yeah, she is terrified of the idea of a corn maze. And myself, you know, the idea of going to a corn maze all by myself doesn't really sound... And, you know, you can't call up your buddies.
That's true.
Are you watching the game this week? You know, I thought we'd go to a corn maze instead.
You know what? That's actually why it's good to have friends who do a lot of drugs, is they're always up for stuff like that.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, that's exactly I think the way a corn maze should be done. so that the terror and confusion and you know, the running back and forth and you know, it's kind of my speculation. I've never actually been in one that you can always get out. You just listen to the sound for the highway and just go break straight through, just Kool-Aid straight through it.
Kool-Aid straight through it. That's a nice verb. Oh yeah, we're out of this maze.
This sucks. Oh yeah, I'm out.
And speaking of out, I think we've Kool-Aided our way out of the segment.
TimSlagle.com, Brian Miller, Brian with a Y, Miller Comedy.com.
And Real Brian Miller on Twitter. And yeah, we'll be back at you next week, assuming that I'm able to escape the maze of my mind.